99.5 FM.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
Before we break it in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil. We know there is a link. Mexico war.
We say code pink.
It's blood for oil. We know there is a link. Mexico war.
We say code pink.
Code pink for freedom. Code pink for peace. Code pink so hunger and war have ceased. Code pink for women, boys, men, and girls. Together.
Was not Iraq, but Iran.
They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
Basic old terror,
we say code pink.
They feed you
lies. That was Code Pink by MS Revolution. I'm Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. Welcome to our Code Pink radio show presented by WBAI in New York City and WPFW in Washington, D.C., both part of the awesome Pacifica network of stations born out of the peace movement in the 40s and supported by you, the listeners. It is so necessary to the possibility for peace to have a place on the airwaves where we can expose the imperialism and violence of those in power. WBAI is free speech community radio supported by your tax-deductible contributions. Please call 212-209-2950 to help WBAI Radio keep broadcasting on 99.5 FM in New York and streaming on WBAI.org. This week, Code Pinkers were busy across the country, but I just want to raise up Nancy Mancias and many of the Code Pinkers joined Winona LaDuke and more than 2,000 water protectors to stage nonviolent actions to halt the construction of Enbridge's Line 3 toxic tar sands pipeline in Minnesota. They joined with many indigenous leaders across the country who came together to call on Biden to stop the construction of the pipeline and protect water and land while honoring the Anishinaabe treaties. It was Minnesota's largest ever anti-pipeline mobilization. Can you believe it? Over 1,000 people marched with indigenous leaders to the headlands of the Mississippi River for a treaty ceremony at the site where the pipeline is proposed to cross. It's proposed to cross on the headwaters of the Mississippi River. I mean, do you know how many times these pipelines leak? Anyway, further south, over 500 indigenous people, allies, and celebrities shut down an active Line 3 pump station in a massive direct action in solidarity with the Jinu Collective. It's a group of indigenous women, Two-Spirit-led frontline defense group that Terhaska is at the leadership of. So on Monday at daybreak, hundreds of land defenders reached the two inlets, Line 3 pump station. Some climbed ladders or locked themselves to equipment, while others blockaded the entrance and held the space. Jane Fonda, Winona LaDuke, Terhaska, Catherine Keener, Rosanna Arquette, Taylor Schilling, and Big Wind all gave remarks from inside an active pump station where the water protectors were occupying the station. Terhaska said, "Our mother is calling out. It's time for us to listen, to do the work, to remember how. It's also time for us to stand with our words. The situation is urgent. It requires urgent response. Find your bravery. Find your community. Find your truth. Stand with us and stop lying free. And I feel like her words speak to us not just about protecting the water, that we can have clean water to drink, but it's so important to, as we, you know, talk about war and peace, that we all need to be standing up to say no to war, no to the money that's flowing to war. And so, you know, it's so crazy that these tar sands that they want to push through Minnesota, that the catastrophe, the carbon intensiveness of these tar sands is equivalent to building 50 coal plants. Now, you know, China's part of what we're talking about today, and China made a pledge just a month ago to close down their coal plants. And we are escalating our carbon footprint instead of de-escalating our carbon footprint, just as we are escalating the funds that we want to put into war instead of divesting from war. So before we get to our first guest, I want to also talk about what Code Pink activists have been calling on, which is National Geographic has Israeli actress and Wonder Woman Gal Gadot hosting their program Impact, where episode 5 highlights the displacement of indigenous people. It's an insult to us at Code Pink that Gal Gadot should be hosting such a series that is supposed to empower women when she praises the army that harms and murders Palestinian women every day. Gal Gadot served in the Israeli military as a combat trainer during Israel's brutal 2006 war in Lebanon, when indiscriminate Israeli airstrikes killed about 900 civilians. Clearly, Gal shouldn't be speaking on an indigenous rights, as she directly took part in displacing Palestinians in Palestine. So you can join us to tell National Geographic to stop working with her by going to codepink.org/NatGeo. You know, we've also been calling on Congress to reject President Biden's record high 2022 military budget of $753 billion. That's a $13 billion increase over the Trump administration's previously bloated military budget. You know, with just a 10% reduction in Pentagon spending, that annual savings could eradicate hunger and homelessness every year in the United States. To spend nearly $1 trillion to prepare for war pulls back the curtain on Biden's administration's professed interest in lifting people out of poverty, because that's 65% of your tax dollars. Now, after COVID, we have millions of Americans who are steeped in debt, living paycheck to paycheck, facing eviction, struggling to pay medical bills. While they want to throw that money, that hard-earned money, at an increasingly privatized for-profit war industry. You know, at the same time, Biden is set to withdraw troops from Afghanistan, which should lower the Pentagon budget. He is telling Congress that China is the justification for the massive increase in military spending. But it is Biden and his cabinet member, Secretary of Defense Austin, who are calling China a threat. But the only threat is the U.S. to China. China has one-third the military budget. China has like 1/100 the nuclear missiles. And the U.S. has over 800 overseas military bases, hundreds of which surround the borders of China, while China currently has one located in Djibouti. So as we discuss with our guest today, the fear and lies strategy in its full force, The propaganda is so thick you can't see around it. I'm very excited that our guest this week is the brilliant and radical activist, Marcy Winograd, who ran for Congress in my district here in Southern California, and who is now the coordinator of Code Pink Congress, a campaign to mobilize co-sponsors in Congress for peace and demilitarization legislation. She has read the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act of 2021 that is so aggressive towards China, and she's here to help us understand it. So, Marcy, thank you so much for joining us today and for all you do to engage us in ending wars and getting Congress to have the courage to do the same. So you just said you read a new bill this weekend that's 1,445 pages long. What inspired you to do this, and what can you teach us?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jody and Code Pink, for hosting me on Code Pink Radio. I was inspired to read this bill because I'm curious. I'm curious to see what Congress is up to. And I heard that this bill called the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act of 2021 was going to be driving much of our foreign and domestic policy in the next 5 years. So I thought it was incumbent on me as the coordinator of Code Pink Congress to really read this bill. I mean, how many people are going to read a 1,445-page bill? I guess somebody like me doesn't have that much to do on the weekend. But I'm glad I did read it. It's a concern. So I thought I would briefly summarize the bill and then go into detail about some aspects, some of the disturbing aspects of this bill. The bill, the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act of 2021, is an anti-China bill that in essence sacrifices climate to empire. It says that our number one national security threat, not just our national security threat, but the global security threat, is the rise of China, and that we must do everything possible to thwart this. That means establish a director of technology to send billions of dollars into cities to create technology hubs, to schools to create STEM programs, science, engineering, technology, and math, and to embolden, empower someone within every federal agency to look at this situation and say, how can we stop the Chinese from supplanting us as the number one global power? And there's a whole section on militarism that is very, very disturbing. And I would appreciate an opportunity to talk about that as well.
Well, let's just stop for a minute. Sure. Because I don't want you to run past this idea that is being penetrated into our brains that is already false. So China as a global power, that's how Western culture looks at the situation. But, you know, let's remind the listeners that Western culture is on the, you know, the philosophy of Plato and Socrates, who had slaves, right? And then even later in like the 1600s, Western, you know, European Western countries got on ships and colonized the world. But let's look at China. China at the same time sits on the philosophy of Lao Tzu. And, you know, it's about how do we cooperate together. And at the time when Europe went out in boats to colonize, it burned its boats and created avenues for trading. The trading is how we learn, how we become internationalists, how we learn about each other, how we share with each other, and they never traded slaves. So, you know, watching the United States aggress on China is kind of scary because they make, again, this false boogeyman. So I just want to interrupt your words of, you know, stop China from becoming a world superpower.
China doesn't want to become a world superpower. Actually, China wants to save the world. It wants to commit itself to, you know, the planet, and is doing so and is making statements. It wants to stop the development of nuclear weapons and is committed to no first use. It took all of its people out of poverty. So I just want to, like, even in the describing of the situation, it holds the U.S. narrative, which is the U.S. aggressive narrative on China. Sorry.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Throughout the bill, threaded throughout this bill, the United States Innovation and Competition Act of 2021, are references to the United States upholding the international rule of law, the world order. And every time I read that, I tell you, I just, it gives me the creeps. I think about us killing a million plus people in Iraq, displacing 5 million in the Middle East, supplying arms, the latest arms shipment of $750 million to Israel to target the Palestinians. I think of how we have funded these death squads in Central America, how we are increasing our nuclear arsenal. And I say to myself, are you kidding me? You're describing the United States as the upholder of the world order, of the rule of law, as we conduct drone strikes, extrajudicial killings, assassinations overseas. So given that context.
Let's even come home and talk about, like, how many people are in solitary confinement in the United States every night. How many people who are in jail work as slaves picking cotton in the South? And, you know, that we have more people in prison in the United States than any country in the world.
Not statistics to be proud of, certainly. In terms of this bill, when you look at what it includes, it includes at minimum a $600 million expansion of the Pentagon into the South China Sea area, which is an area that involves a lot of countries, something like, you know, when you're talking about the Indo-Pacific, they call it the Indo-Pacific Command. I think it's about 37 countries, countries such as China, North Korea, Australia, New Zealand, the Marshall Islands, Malaysia, and on. And it says that what we need to do to thwart China's ascendancy in their own backyard is to send more weapons to these countries, more missiles. We need to conduct more military exercises, which is exercise. This is a euphemism for mock nuclear strikes. Can you imagine if the Chinese had ships off the coast of California, where I am, where you are, and they were conducting mock nuclear strikes on San Francisco or Los Angeles? No one would tolerate that. Well, that's what we are doing in the South China Sea. And it says that we need to ensure that we have combat credible forces that are forward deployed in the waters in these countries surrounding China. This legislates militarism. We already have the National Defense Authorization. This goes one step beyond. It's a 5-year plan. So the whole section on militarism is of grave concern to Code Pink, to anyone who wants to see and envision world peace, particularly in the face of a climate crisis. Which brings me to my next point, which is that a few months ago, climate envoy John Kerry sat down with the Chinese leaders and negotiated a climate agreement, which said two things. The United States and China would work together to ensure, or rather strengthen, the implementation of the Paris Accord, Paris Climate Accord. And secondly, that we would work together on long-term strategies for carbon neutrality. I read this bill, 1,445 pages of the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act 2021. I didn't read one word about this agreement that was only negotiated back in April between John Kerry and the Chinese leaders. In fact, there's just, I would say maybe there are one or two, three possible sentences that mention diplomacy or respect for bilateral agreements. But by and large, I think this bill is a big kick to the curb for John Kerry. Here we are facing an existential climate crisis, rising sea levels, famine, extreme weather. We're looking at massive displacement of climate refugees. And the bill is talking about how we have to compete with China at every level. We have to militarize. We have to build up our artificial intelligence capabilities. That's a whole other subject.
Well, does the bill mention that we have lost every war that we have fought in Asia against much smaller countries? And that we just lost two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and spent trillions of dollars destroying the planet, people's lives, and communities and whole segments of the world? Where does it mention that?
It never mentions that, Jody. That was conveniently left out. What it mentions is that the U.S. must ensure it supplants China as the preeminent power in the South China Sea and, in fact, the world. I think that...
You know what's interesting about this, Marcy, is that in the last 20 years, while the U.S. has spent all these trillions of dollars on war, destroying and destroying and destroying, in that same 20 years, the standard of living has gone up 8% every year for a Chinese citizen. While the money that should have gone to U.S. citizens went to war, and also... the Chinese, a country of 1.5 billion people, spend one-third the amount of money on their military budget as the United States. And you know what they do with the money that the United States puts into weapons? They give free education and spend a lot of money on R&D that hasn't happened in the United States in a really long time, which I think is what the United States is waking up to. But instead of solving the problem and saying, let's take the money from war and invest in our people, this doesn't sound like they've learned that lesson.
No, what they have done is they have folded two bills into one bill. The bill that Ro Khanna, our Congress member in Northern California, had authored, the Endless Frontiers Act, and this other bill, the hawkish Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey authored, the Strategic Competition Act. They folded it into this one bill, the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act 2021, and they have infused this bill with anti-China rhetoric. It's really like a manifesto of hate, as I read it, against a country that includes 1.4 billion people, as you mentioned, that is the world's leading exporter, and that owns over a trillion dollars of U.S. debt. Can you imagine if the Chinese sat down and read this manifesto of hate and said, you know what, we're going to call in our debt, the principal on our debt. The dollar, the U.S. dollar, would plummet and slow our economy to a crawl. Apparently that is not a consideration, or it's not a concern. What is of utmost concern is that the U.S. maintain global hegemony on every level. And so according to this bill, we're going to have people in every department of the federal government looking at how can we compete with China? What can we do to stop China's rise? It's as though they forgot to drink their coffee in 2013 when the Chinese initiated the Belt and Road Initiative and have suddenly said, oh my gosh, China is going to be connected with 70 countries from Asia to Africa to Europe with ports and roads and airports and railroad tunnels. And what are we doing? We're investing in war.
We're bombing them. We're droning their citizens. Yes.
Yes. And
we're doing the exact opposite. But isn't there something in the bill that says if a country takes a loan from China, the U.S. won't give them aid?
Yes, I mean, I couldn't quote that offhand, but there are clauses about we don't want any loans going to China for this Belt and Road Initiative, and that we want to build up our partnerships with financially and militarily with those nations that are and islands that are in the surrounding neighborhood of China.
Well, how dangerous is that? We think about the bully in the schoolyard. You're an amazing teacher. This really feels like the bully in the schoolyard, where it's like divide and conquer. When we know that is a fail, we know that is what is part of the war economy. And if we are going to get to peace, we know the only way is global cooperation. So here we are about to spend all this money on a fail. It's not like a fifth grader, a kindergartner could tell you this is a fail. It ends in failure. And this is, you know, this is actually, you said global hegemony. It was Rumsfeld back in the 90s who wrote a paper with the plan for the U.S. to have global hegemony. And when that was printed or released or like somebody leaked it, all the media, everyone laughed and was embarrassed and ashamed. And now it's the Biden blueprint. What has happened in those 30 years?
It's as though Congress, the leadership in Congress, I'm talking about Senator Schumer, Senator Menendez, it's as though they, and I believe elements and, you know, people within the Biden administration are on steroids in their concern about China as a competitor. And I hope people take a long, hard look at this bill. I'm concerned, you know, they've thrown in a lot of language to try to pull in progressives. They have said they're going to pump all this money into STEM programs, science, technology, education, math, in historically black colleges.
You know, at the same time, they're going to those historical black colleges and poaching on the black women in the STEM program to work for the defense industry.
I'm not surprised.
It's really horrible. It's a whole program.
It is. And there needs to be a lot of education around this bill. I just hope we have time. You know, I hope they don't try to jam it through and Biden signs it before anyone even knows that it happened. Some of the language, I just want to read some of the here's a sentence from the bill. The United States leads the free and open international order. Right? This bill, it looks like it was written by some holdovers from Dick Cheney's office, you know, the neocons. It's Trump on steroids, really. Yeah.
Really?
Trump, he scapegoated the Chinese. He ensured that we had more sanctions on the Chinese. But this bill goes one step beyond because it really legislates for the next 5 years hatred toward the nation of China.
We are talking to Marcy Winograd, the coordinator of Code Pink Congress. You can join her every Tuesday evening as she interviews a member of Congress or an expert in the field a bill is being debated on, with time to ask questions of the guests, followed by calling Congress together on the issue of the week. You learn a lot, get inspired, and engaged. The tenets of Code Pink. Educate, inspire, and activate. Go to codepink.org and sign up. We will be back for more with Marcy after the station break. You are listening to Code Pink Radio, coming to you through Pacifica Radio's WPFW in Washington, D.C., and WBAI in New York City.
I hold my head up high, even though they try to break us. They can't shake us, take us to the edge so we can jump on their terms. They can't make us like ghosts, we disappear. Return like a leap year, we become the atmosphere of all that they once feared. I'm the lion and the deer, so I hold my head up high. Even though I try to break me, I can't shake me. I'm the open sky, I leap. Repeal all that for baby. I'm your king, I'm your lady. Not scared of what awaits me. Your shady arrogance needs a makeover to face me. I entered all your spheres, I never disappeared. Transformed the atmosphere of all that I was feared. I'm the smallest molecule in a universal gear. I'm wide awake cause I fly away where the wide awakes while you tide away. But for all the lies that you hid away in the day to day, we're a passageway to another world. Just yesterday in an alleyway trying to lead astray. Or underway to the Milky Way. What?
Maybe you feel cold inside, maybe you feel dark. Maybe it's broke outside, maybe it's just a start. Maybe every single pain you've ever faced will wash away if you let it fall like rain. Let it fall like rain.
Take my storms in stride.
fall like rain by my dear comrade in cultivating a peace economy, Alixa Garcia, with her friends Brave Water and David Williamson. Alixa has delighted those of us in the streets with her music and poetry as half of climbing poetry. She took 2020 off to paint and just returned to the recording studio for this. You heard it first here on Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City and WPFW in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, and now let's finish our conversation with Marcy Winograd of Code Pink Congress. She has been unpacking the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act of 2021, which, as we heard, is an aggressive attack on China and more money for weapons and war instead of the cooperation we need on issues like climate chaos.
So, Marcy, I've been kind of watching this for a year when I started to hear the lies about China and the propaganda. And I was like, this feels like a rock all over again. And you're talking about a bill of a lot of pages that nobody reads and they're going to vote on. And it's the same War Powers Act that nobody read and that we're still suffering under, 18, 19 years later. And why do these bills get rammed through? Why do members of Congress surrender to what they know is wrong? I mean, first of all, a thinking adult would never make a decision based on fear or hatred or lies. That's like doomed to failure. As an adult, you look and go, oh, that's not going to get me anywhere. That's not information I can make a decision around. And I think there's even a lot of lies inside that bill, about.
Oh, yes. I read one lie. It accused the Chinese for violating the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty by doubling their nuclear arsenal, and then went on to say that the United States lives up to its treaty obligations under the NPT, which is an outright lie. Here we have, with Biden's blessing, the Pentagon, the Department of Energy, going forward with a plan for nuclear rearmament that includes 600 new intercontinental ballistic missiles to replace 400 underground silos in states such as North Dakota, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, and I forget exactly how they rationalized that. They said, "Oh, we're just replacing it. We're not producing new nuclear weapons," which is an outright lie. I also want to touch on the most McCarthy-esque aspects of this bill. In addition to funding increasing militarism in the South China Sea and writing basically a recipe for war, the bill domestically says that grants should be withheld from colleges that partner with what they term Confucius Institutes, government-funded education that would teach Chinese language and culture. It says the comptroller should issue a report on the Sister Cities program, which is people-to-people diplomacy, right? Most of our cities have sister cities throughout the world. It's a great program. And there are a number of sister cities, actually in New York itself, where Schumer is from, the state he represents, that are already sister cities, but with China.
Sister cities with China, yes. Yes, people-to-people diplomacy. I want to just go back to the university thing you mentioned. So I was just looking into the fact that there are some university departments, political science departments that were failing and needed money. And the State Department and the military came in, fully funded them, and took them over to militarize political science. Wow. So just FYI, why would they be suspicious that that could happen if they hadn't already done it themselves? It seems like they're looking out and looking at the world through the lens of who they are instead of the lens of peace and cooperation that basically most of the rest of the world desires.
Yes, there's an Association of American Colleges I read initially supported this bill because of all the money, the billions it would plow into science, technology, engineering, and math, but now are stepping back and saying, we're not sure about this bill. We don't like this bill because it's going to inhibit our partnerships with countries like China to develop programs, climate programs, right, that are going to address a crisis that faces us, an existential crisis with the climate. So we see already some of the support eroding. I read that there's a Republican caucus, the largest Republican caucus in Congress, that doesn't like all the money, the federal money that's being plowed into private programs. They have no problem with the militarism, but they don't like this idea of plowing $100 billion or $50 billion into cities to develop technology hubs. They're probably concerned also that these cities might go blue, right? But that's their concern, and I think that we should, in all honesty, we have to reach out and build a broad coalition to oppose this China hate bill, this bill for empire, because what I see Chuck Schumer doing is he wants to plow money into cities for technology and innovation, and he probably thinks, I'm being generous here, that the only way he can do that is by bringing Republicans on board with more money for the Pentagon, which is what they're doing.
Well, but you also mentioned that it goes into private hands, which also, how does that keep from the growing inequality that we're witnessing? How does that keep make sure that those that it's got equity built into it? Where are those the foundational needs that we have right now of creating more equity, creating more responsibility to you can't have a democracy if you don't have equality, and you can't have a democracy if it's all built, everything's built on lies, and you don't even have journalists who are unpacking this bill as well as you are. I mean, the fact that we're turning to you to unpack this bill for us is, and it's like, how can you have democracy with an uninformed electorate? So I just want to do a little plug for Pacifica, and where we're housed here at WBAI and WPFW, that, to have places where we can talk about these things, where they aren't being co-opted, where they aren't being lied about, where the propaganda, the propaganda right now on this aggression towards China is really insane. You can watch a headline, full of lies, come out and be printed everywhere that has no relevance in the truth. And so, Marcy, I'm so grateful that you took the time to read this bill and to share it with us. What can we tell the audience to be doing right now? First of all, I think everybody should show up to Marcy's Tuesday nights. They're amazing. She brings on a special guest every Tuesday night. It's 5 o'clock on the West Coast, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. You can figure out the other times in between. And we get an hour of this kind of teaching, of really in-depth understanding of the issues that are important to us in the day, and then who we need to talk to about affecting them. And then the last half hour of the call is literally all together on Zoom, making phone calls to our member of Congress and our senators with, the phone number and what to say right in front of us and shared. And we shared the stories of what we got and who we moved and what the, fun stories about doing it together. So it's like being in the room and calling Congress together. So you can find out how to join if you go to codepink.org, and it'll be on the homepage slider. Marcy, what else can we do?
Yes, well, and also you can go to codepink.org/codepinkcongress and sign up there to join us every Tuesday night. Thank you for the plug, Jody. When we host Code Pink Congress, I host it with my co-host, Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, and Hania Jodat Barnes of Muslim Delegates Alliance. We are going to be talking in the future about more about this bill and China, as well as reaching across the aisle to push back on seemingly endless militarism, and how we can generate interest within the union movement, the labor movement, to transition out of the weapons industry. Back to the bill for a minute, and what we can do to try to stop or at least amend the most egregious portions of the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act of 2021. I would suggest, first of all, please do share the article that I co-authored with Medea Benjamin. It's on Common Dreams, and it's called Schumer's Anti-China Bill Sacrifices Climate for Empire. And the reason why I said climate for empire is because China and the United States are largely responsible for about half of the carbon emissions in the world. And we do need to work together, and that was the whole point of the negotiated agreement that Kerry worked out with the Chinese around Biden's World Climate Summit. We can also reach out, of course, to our members of Congress, whether they be Republican, Democrat, Independent. It doesn't matter, because this bill is being trumpeted as a bipartisan bill. And I say, hey, Senator Schumer, before you uncork the champagne bottle to celebrate bipartisan militarism, please consider some of these amendments. So if we cannot defeat the bill, I would say extract the entire section on international security matters that lays the foundation for a five-year-long, minimally, buildup in the South China Sea, a recipe for war. I would say cut out all of the red-baiting, McCarthy-esque sections that threaten to withhold funds, investigate universities, sister city programs, that sort of thing. And I think we also need to take a hard look at the section on artificial intelligence. This bill, in addition to its emphasis on militarism, it directs the head of the Department of Homeland Security to act when there is a national emergency or disaster that's broadly defined to include threats to national security, foreign affairs, but also an undermining of public confidence. What is that? That's a national security threat when we lose public confidence in the United States. And it directs the Department of Homeland Security to marshal all of these resources to mitigate this threat. It's vague language, but it's frightening language because it empowers this department that we know has not been a champion for peace and diplomacy, the Department of Homeland Security. So I would say, call your member of Congress, have a meeting, take a look at this article, take a look at the bill. There's a link to the bill in our article, Schumer's anti-China bill sacrifices climate for empire, and urge your member of Congress to oppose this bill and at the very least to demand amendments. And I would also say write the White House, you know, you can get their email online, and ask President Biden not to sign this bill. Of course, that's probably a stretch, but, you know, it's important that he hear from us. I counted the number of times the words Secretary of State are in this bill, because as I was reading, I thought, oh, the Secretary of State again, the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is mentioned 145 times, I think, 145 times. And the President himself is mentioned, I think, 180 times. So this bill is greatly empowering the Secretary of State, almost on par with the President of the United States. When we look at our current Secretary of State.
Wait, isn't the Secretary of State supposed to be the diplomat for the country?
Well, that's what's so interesting about this bill. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because it does, by inserting the Secretary of State 140, 145 times, it frames it as though this bill is not frightening, as this bill is being ushered in by the department that represents our diplomatic efforts. But when you look more closely, when you scrutinize the Department of State, you see it could also be called the Department of Sanctions, the Department of War. Every time I hear about new sanctions, it's from the Department of State. People may not realize sanctions are another form of warfare, right? Because they cut off basic goods to countries, even though they are framed as though they are very narrow or humanitarian goods are exempt. In reality, banks don't want to loan to countries that are under sanctions. They don't want to loan to countries for COVID vaccines or medical supplies. None of that. So our Department of State has become the Department of Sanctions, a.k.a. the Department of War, the second Department of War.
How did we get here, Marcy? I mean, really, this is really insane that we've built up a military budget this high. We are out of the Iraq and Afghanistan war. We should have learned amazing lessons over the last 20 years. I mean, we're horrible at war. We fail. We fail over and over at all the promises we make about making the world safer, about bringing democracy. We can't even bring democracy to our own country. And so we fail. And now here we have a bill that not only doesn't admit the failure, but that is about to plunge us into, this is a plunge. This is not just light. This is really a plunge. This is a deeper plunge into an abyss that we've been plunging into since 9/11. And we've got to turn around and learn the lessons. And this is not a lesson learned. This is the opposite.
Yeah, we need a soft landing. I mean, every empire collapses ultimately, right, throughout history. And I wrote in this article, this bill reads like the last gasp of a dying empire. They are panicked, panic-stricken over this thought that the United States will not rule the world. Of course, we want a soft landing. We don't want a violent end to this empire. And I hope people do wake up. We need people to really be on guard, to be engaged, to be in the offices of their Congress members, their senators. Unfortunately, you know, we have big money on the one hand. You have a military-industrial complex, the five biggest military contractors. Help me out here. General Dynamics, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Lockheed
Martin.
And there's one more. Anyway, they have plowed a ton of money to buy members of Congress, to buy senators.
Our money that they get paid for by their taxes. It's like it's a whoa, revolving door of just take our money away from us and buy more members of Congress.
How much money
do those CEOs make, Marcy?
Oh. Six digits plus, right?
Oh, scary, scary.
Scary. So while we're on that subject, before I forget, because I want to urge people to ask their member of Congress and senator to sign the Code Pink Pledge. You can find it on CodePink.org and Code Pink Congress that asks them to sign a pledge saying they will not accept any money from the five top military contractors, some of whom I just mentioned. And that's very, very important that we do that. I think, how did we get here? You know, it's been a trajectory. Eisenhower certainly warned us about this. And we see that this is like pushing, in many ways, pushing the rock up the hill, the myth of Sisyphus. But ultimately, injustice doesn't last forever, you know. And that's what we have to remind ourselves. We abolished slavery in the United States, institutionalized slavery. Women won the right to vote. We will change. We have to change. And we really have no other choice but to push for radical change.
Okay, so I just want to remind everyone that those things happen by efforts of millions of people over long periods of time that never lost hope. So they didn't just happen. And I think, you know, what Marcy's calling us to do is to really engage deeply, that this is very serious. And there is a future, but we need to work for it. And so please go to codepink.org. We have lots of things for you to engage in. You know, Senator Markey ran for Congress on a platform of peace, and he knocked out Joe Kennedy on that platform with a lot of young people. So we have a direct campaign right now that you can do, codepink.org, Markey China, telling him to stand up for what he ran on and lead you know, his members of the Senate against this bill, or at least lead on pulling in the resolutions that Marcy talked about earlier. Marcy, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you so much for all you do and for your passion and for your capacity to take us deep into these issues.
Well, thank you, Jody and Code Pink. There is no other organization that I know that is as committed to peace and justice, not only at home but abroad, with all sorts of partnerships internationally. And please do join Code Pink, join Jody, me, and all the others who are in the trenches and mobilizing and organizing for peace. It's going to take all of us to achieve this. Thank you.
You can follow Marcy and her passionate tweeting at Marcy Winograd, and you can join, as she said, her Code Pink Congress by going to codepink.org/codepinkcongress. So as Marcy said, this is the last gasp of the dying empire, and we must expose it for the insanity that it is. That other weapons manufacturer she didn't mention is General Dynamics, and co-founder of Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, disrupted their shareholder meeting just a few weeks ago. She asked the CEO, Feed No Gavak, how she feels about personally making $20 million a year through a business model that thrives on conflict, death, and destruction. She mentioned a 200-pound General Dynamics bomb that hit a Yemeni marketplace, killing 97 civilians, including 25 children, and asked, what is the moral justification for flooding the Middle East with more weapons when the region is in desperate need to end conflicts, especially the ones General Dynamics profits from? Medea brought up the unethical revolving door between the company and the government and pointed to General James Mattis as a perfect example. Mattis, who was at the meeting, was on the board before becoming Trump's Secretary of Defense, and at the May 5th shareholder meeting, he was voted back on the board. Medea also brought up the company's involvement in Trump's detention of children at the U.S.-Mexico border, accusing the company of profiting from children locked in cages. The CEO said that was not true and suggested a meeting between her and Medea to clarify the company's positions, but Medea has been asking for the meeting, and so far it's crickets. General Dynamics is one of the world's largest arms manufacturers, with a long-lasting contract with Saudi Arabia, estimated at $1.3 billion worth of weapons to the country waging a war on Yemen that has already killed an estimated hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. The company's arms sales to despotic regions in the Middle East only contribute to the ongoing conflict and the humanitarian crisis in the region, which creates strong resentments towards the U.S. and contributes to the rise of violent extremism. We must end the ever-expanding military budget that makes the rich richer as they make a killing on killing. Using China as a reason for more weapons is a lie. It is up to all of us to stand up and speak out. Those funds belong to the people, and it is time the funds are spent on the needs of the people. The gap between the rich and the poor increased even more last year. Join us at Code Pink. We give you ways to engage each week and keep you educated on what really is happening around war, and we wish we could report that something is actually happening to cultivate peace in Washington. But that is happening in your communities, and the movement is growing. Join us to plant seeds of peace locally at codepink.org/peaceeconomy. Thank you for listening to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City and WPFW in Washington, D.C. We thank you to Pacifica for creating the capacity for us to share the truth. Onward to peace. Please become a WBAI buddy in the name of Code Pink for $10 a month or more. You can go to give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to become a WBAI buddy in the name of Code Pink, and tell us what you like about the program. Thank you.
We say Code Pink, it's lust for all. We know there's a link. They say Code War. We say Code Pink, Code Pink. For freedom, Code Pink. For peace, Code Pink. Some hunger and war have ceased. Code Pink, for women, boys, men, and girls. Together we'll make peace. It's Dominator, they say. We built him up. We trained him to be a man. When our enemy was not Iraq, but Iran, they feed you lies and want you to think. They say Code Terror, we say Code Pink. They feed you lies and want you to think. They say Code Terror, we say Code Pink. Code Pink, freedom, Code Pink. For peace, Code Pink. To hunger and war have ceased. Code Pink, for women.
everybody. Are you ready to be inspired? If so, I want you to listen to my show. I'm Harriet Cole, host of Dreamleapers here on WBAI. What I do is to bring amazing guests, artists, producers, writers, business owners, entrepreneurs who have accessed and activated their dreams and who will tell us how they did it to inspire us to do the same. We're on at a new time now, Friday mornings at 9 a.m. Tune in to WBAI to listen to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I know you want to be inspired. Me too. Join me.
Hey, this is Michael, a BAI buddy from Brooklyn. WBAI, oh, WBAI, you're listening to WBAI, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Listen and learn. And become a BAI buddy today.
Whether you get up early on Saturday morning or stay up late on Friday night, we have good news for you.
Back of the Book, the only radio program that has endorsed hell, will be there for you every Saturday morning at 5 a.m.
Regular listeners will no longer have to figure out which Saturday morning is the alternate one. Back of the Book, every Saturday morning at 5, only here on WBAI New York.
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to givetowbai.org and become a BAI buddy to support Free Speech Radio today.
Untitled, produced and hosted by Malika Lee Whitney, will be heard on Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Untitled presents features on the arts, culture, education, and social issues. You will also enjoy music from a variety of genres. Special guests complement the program with insightful and engaging conversation. That's Untitled, Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. over listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah, you do that announcement.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's the station identification. I need to do it again.
Well, hold on. How about I do it?
Okay. Yeah,
So, it's, you turned to...
Tuned to.
Yeah,
you tuned to radio
to
station.
Radio station WB, what is it?
AI, WBAI.
Oh,
you
yeah.
tuned to WBAI New York.
Listener Spangled.
Sponsored. Listener Sponsored.
Non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York.
Streaming at
WBAI.org, huh?
Good. Really? Well...
Would you get back in there?
Sure. Yeah. Hey, thanks.
And you are listening to WBAI in New York. And we wish you good morning from this part of Brooklyn. And right now it is cloudy and 63 degrees. The weather looks to be rising throughout the day to about 70, and we invite you to stay tuned for First Voices coming up right now.
You're such a threat.